All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast. My name is Tom, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Check them out. They appreciate it. We appreciate it. Everybody appreciates it. How's everybody doing this morning? It is July the 8th, 2021. Beautiful day here on the Delmarva. A little cloudy. Looks hot. I think there's a hurricane coming. Ailsa. Well, I don't think it's... I think it's a more like a tropical depression now or a tropical incident. Something like that. I don't know. But it's probably going to get pretty rainy. I actually have kind of a big day today. Got to drive up to Wilmington, take my son for a doctor's appointment. So it's going to be a busy day, so I thought we'd get here early and see if we could just do a little Sharon, because Sharon's Karen, and get the day started. So how are you? How's it going? I'm, I know today, a huge inconvenience, if I'm going to peel it all back, take a good hard look at the day. I already know it's going to be a major inconvenience for a guy like me, even though I'm getting to do something so amazing, such a gift, which is take my son to a doctor's appointment for which I have insurance, for which, at some point we were responsible enough to get him into the system of an AI DuPont. My son Sam was born with a club foot. Club foot. I remember when we got the ultrasound and I saw that little foot and I said, uh-oh, something's wrong. And for a guy that doesn't like to be inconvenienced, it was a major inconvenience, right? And of course, you do anything for your kid, and he is such a great boy, and it's weird. And today, he became a patient at Bidet I DuPont, and they put his ass in a cast this first week of being even born, straighten that little leg out, and he is doing fantastic. But, once you're in a system like that over at AI DuPont, you want to kind of stay into it because they don't want to release you. Because if there's, unfortunately, as we grow and as our body changes, things change, and they just want to make sure that they keep an eye on him for a while so that, if something happens, it's not hard to get him back into the system. So we take him up every 6 months and get him checked out. So that's the thing I get to do today. And, as amazing as it is and as an inconvenience it is, it's just a reflection of sobriety and, just trying to live a good life and be there for your kids or, me for my kids. What a gift. And I'm just putting it out there. It'll be an inconvenience. I don't mind. Of course I don't mind. But if at any point today I become annoyed or short, it'll be because of that. What a day. What a time in my life, at least. I'm sure in a lot of people's lives, different things going on. I see the world changing right before my eyes, people changing, our thoughts, behaviors. I'm sure they're always changing, but just a real eye-opening experience right now on how people are. And, talking to a guy yesterday, and which I thought was really interesting. He was like, him and his wife have been working from home, during this whole pandemic. And I was, which seriously, I'm totally curious how this is even going to work, right? You work at a job and then now you go work at home. And now what? They're going to make you go back to your job or go back to working at the job? It's going to be interesting. And in my conversation with him, I was like, what's that going to be like? What's it going to be like when you have to go back? Because part of me wants people to go back to work. I live in a town that everybody decided they would just come and move to their, whether it's a second home, a beach home, they're selling everything and moving down here to make it their primary home. But everyone is moving here. And I think it's happening everywhere, whether it's the mountains, wherever you might see people that have second homes or beach houses. People are like, look at it. I'm going to work from home and just move to the beach. And I get it. Listen, no hate. I'm not surprised, right? I don't blame you. But now we have a lot of people that are living here, and it's a little bit of a challenge. And so, whatever. But my conversation was like, well, you know, what are companies saying? You know, because there was a lot of businesses that had a lot of money invested in a lot of office space. So, and I asked him, I said, if they called you and said, hey, man, you got to come back to work, would you come back? And he's like, I don't know. It sounded to me like it was if he had the opportunity, he would quit. He wouldn't go back. Right. He would rather figure out how to save in spending money, cut back maybe just to one car, you know, whatever it is, adjust their spending to maybe allow him to be more at home. I feel like that this happened to a lot of people. You know, I think a lot of people, and you'll hear it, oh, nobody wants to go back to work. No, I think we just gave everybody like a year and a half to really think about stuff and start figuring out, you know. I remember when that first, when the pandemic first hit and we were shut down, we had to close the salon for 6 weeks. It was very weird, right? I remember running out on the trail, and I remember everybody walking. And people walking with, you know, husbands and wives or whatever, partners or couples or whatever it was, they're all walking. And probably 9/10 of them wouldn't have been walking prior. But since we're in a pandemic and, you know, there's really nothing else to do, let's get back to, like, being like a family or spending time together. And in that year and a half, I think people have really found value in that. And there's people that are really questioning whether they want to go back to that 5 days a week, you know, grind. And I was talking to somebody last night, somebody that is close, you know, is part of our family. And we were talking, they live up in Connecticut, and they're talking about the city and people coming back. And he's a little older than me, and he says, you know, I just don't feel like anybody wants to work anymore. This generation, which is a total cop-out thing to say, is that this generation doesn't want to work. That's not true. It's not true. I mean, my son's 15. He loves working. He works. 15. I mean, the kid just ordered an e-bike. I mean, the kid is taking care of business. I told him the other day, dude, you're so far ahead of where I was at 15. He loves to work, but you know what he loves? You know what he loves? He loves money, and he likes to get paid. And I can tell you that my son is getting paid working at a local coffee shop down in the town almost as much as other people I know that have really good jobs. Right? Because what you're hearing and what you're seeing is our people are like, do I want to go work in an office and grind it out 40 hours a week for really not a lot of money, just barely to get by? Do I want to continue to do that? Is it worth it? And I was telling the person I was talking to on the phone, I go, and really for what? You know, we work and we work and we work, and what do? We just buy junk, crap, more crap. The richer you are, the more crap that you have. You know, it goes back into that, you know, the ability, the desire for most people to want to be unique, right? I mean, where I live here at the beach, it's amazing. It's beautiful. But, you know, when I first moved here 25 years ago, to compare it to what it has turned into is almost like night and day. You know, it used to be, we used to live in a town where people used to come for the summer. There wasn't enough amenities here. There wasn't enough stuff to live here all year. I mean, there was. Clearly there was, or we wouldn't have started doing it. But, you know, it wasn't really set up for that. It was set up for, you know, a ton of people come here for the summer. You know, a lot of, like, little shops and markets and, you know, all these different little things would open up for the summer, right? And then at the end of the summer, they would close. And at some point, we started, you know, staying here all the time. I know my parents wanted to retire here. We moved here in 1994, and it wasn't for the summer. It was year-round. And there was a real change from the summer to the winter back in those days. But now, it's crazy. And now, you know, this desire to be unique, you know, first it's like, let's move to the beach. And then let's have the best spot at the beach. And now you're seeing all of these developments pop up. And they're just putting houses in places houses really shouldn't go. Out in the marsh. And you know the funny thing about people being unique is, you know, when a person is you know, whether it's if it's, you know, being unique or you know, because of the money they have, they're allowed to do something that we couldn't do. But behind the scenes, knowing that it's not that great. Like, you see somebody that lives out on this exclusive little island, right? You're like, God, how fucking cool would that be? They're out on that island. So awesome. But the people that live there are like, God damn it, I have to drive on this fucking weird island, road to the island road, you know, that takes 30 minutes and it's some days gets washed out. But everybody's looking at us and we're unique, right? We're special. You know, I know all these houses. I remember my ex-father-in-law, they had this big house and they lived right on the water. And but, you know, and he had a big boat, right? And he had a, he actually had two boats. And he would, you know, they had him out on his little dock at the end of his property. You know, had this great house and on the water. And you're like, hey, it's on the water. Yep. You know, you can see his shoulders come back. Our house is on the water. You couldn't fucking go outside in that house. You could not go outside. You were inundated with flies. You know why? Because it built his fucking house in the marsh. The farther, the more opportunity to be unique, the more shit you got to put up with. And they're building these mansions, man, out on the freaking marsh, man. And it is the marsh. I've flown my drone out there. They're, you know, they just backfill it, I guess, and put a house out there and put a driveway. I've flown my drone out there, and like when we've had big storms, part of their front yard is underwater. But they're out there, right? For the rest of us lower folks to stare out and say, how awesome is that to be out there? But they're not out on the porch. No. They're not out on their deck. No. Because there's fucking so many goddamn flies and mosquitoes. You can't enjoy it. So the enjoyment is the ability to say that you got something that most people don't have, right? You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you.
Mother, do you think they'll drop the bomb? Mother, do you think they'll like this song? Should I run for president? Mother, should I trust the government? Mother, will they put me in the fire in the air? Is it just a waste of time? Hush now, baby, baby, don't you cry. Mama's gonna make oil.
true. Mama's gonna put all of your fears into you. Mama's gonna keep you right here under her wing. She won't let you fly, but she might let you sing. Mama's gonna keep baby cozy and warm.
I think it'll always be an issue. It'll always be a challenge. I mean, whether you're building a house in the marsh or I'm doing a podcast, right? I mean, it's always just trying to do our thing. You know, it is what it is, but we've got a lot of people here. And, you know, one of the, I've talked about this before, one of my absolute favorite show, and actually I probably could go the rest of my life and just watch this television show, because I don't watch that much TV, sort of. I say that, but some days I find myself watching a lot of TV, so whatever. But I don't have a whole list of shows. I watch YouTube and The West Wing. That's it. And I get most of my satisfaction through YouTube, but, you know, West Wing's when we really when my wife's had enough of YouTube and she wants to watch something. So we always watch the West Wing, and we watch it through 7 seasons and start over. And we didn't just start over, but we just started over a little while, not that long ago. And, there's a lot of great lessons I learned in that show. And, you know, so one of the, it's probably like the third episode of the first season, you know, Jed Bartlett, who's the president, right, in the show, he's now taking office. And he has to get a physical by the flight surgeon, I guess. And doctor comes into his office, and he's taking his blood pressure. And, you know, the president doesn't have a doctor at this point. So this guy's just filling in. He's just taking care of it, you know, until, you know, all the matter of facts are decided, who will be his doctor and all this stuff. He just needs to get his blood work and, you know, his blood pressure and stuff checked. And they have a good conversation, and the guy talks about how he just had a child and shows the president, oh, beautiful, beautiful mother, you know. It's just a lot of, it's just a great show, but they're having a great conversation. And he goes, I want him to be my doctor. I want you to be my doctor. And he goes, oh, you know, that's great, Mr. President. I appreciate that. He goes, and I will, but first I have to go to, and he's going to another country for some other reason. I forget. And he's like, sounds good. And they have a great conversation. The president really likes this guy. And, you know, the guy really likes the president. So he heads out. He leaves the office. But next day he heads out on a plane to this other country, you know, to do something medical, right? Children or something. I forget. You have to watch the show. It's so good. And so while he's there, you know, they're doing whatever. And then I guess when they're leaving, as they're flying out, his plane gets shot down by, I don't know, some third world country or something. You know, it's over in the Middle East, and he gets shot down and he dies. Well, the president is fucking upset. He's upset because, one, he sent him over there, right? He sent him there, so he felt guilty, I guess, about that. Two, he really liked this guy as a doctor. You know, he really liked him. He was like, you know, this solves a problem. I need a doctor. And three, I think, you know, obviously he just had a child and his wife. And so the president is pissed. So they go to the situation room and they all meet. And you know, the heads of the department are all there in the situation room. And And they call it Pericles one. This proportional response is called Pericles one. And it's like, all right, Mr. President, proportional response one, Pericles one. We will take out, due to these people shooting down this plane, which brought down the doctor and a bunch of other people, we will be taking out 2 radar defense systems, a barracks, a training camp, and something else. And the president is like furious. He's like, I want to carpet bomb this motherfucker because they just killed this guy. And for the reasons why I just listed, he's annoyed. And he goes, this take out a couple of satellites and a couple of this and a couple of that. It's not good enough. This guy was awesome, and I want to carpet bomb these motherfuckers. So when I come back, I want a different opportunity, a different option. Storms out of the Situation Room, right? And they're like, the head of the military says, you need to take care of him, Leo. You need to get a hold of him. You know, you need to set him down. And I said, I guess it's like an hour later. President's cooled down. It's probably a couple hours later. President's cooled down. He comes back. And he goes, all right, you know, what's our second option? You know, the one that's going to bring fucking bombs raining down. He goes, well, Mr. President, he goes, we have Pericles 2, right? This will attack a training station, this, that, and list the whole things. And he goes, you know, we're probably going to lose 2,000 to 3,000 civilians in this attack. And, you know, basically over-the-top response. And as soon as the president heard that like 2,000 to 3,000 civilians were going to die in his response, you know, for justice, he's like, oh, my God, you know, that's all of a sudden that changes something, right? And the point of the show, and the president eventually does Pericles 1, right? And he takes out, he goes, this is what we do, right? You know, they do this to us, we do this to them. And he goes, yes, Mr. President, this is what we do. It's a proportional response. It's a response that's proportional to the action. So, you know, as awful as it was that this doctor died in the plane crash and the show, but it only really, the proportional response wasn't as effective or as big as the president thought it would be. And so they end up doing Pericles 1, and it's a whole thing. But the point of it was is that, you know, I never really, you know, last night, and this kind of ties into the part I was talking about earlier about, you know, all the people here. But, you know, I went to the grocery store. I worked yesterday because of the thing we're doing today. So I had to work on my day off, and I just moved my clients. Now today's my day off. And, but we went to the grocery store, and, you know, it doesn't matter what we bought. The point of it was is that when you leave the grocery store, you come up to a road and it has a stop sign, and you can go right or left. And it's not a main road. It's kind of a road that kind of feeds into a nursing home, another housing development, a Walgreens, a Giant. You know, it kind of feeds into this little area. So when you come up to the stop sign, I look left, and there's cars coming. 9 out of 10 of those cars coming towards me are going to make a right into the Giant, into the grocery store. 1 out of 10 is going to go straight into a housing development. So yesterday, you know, I'm at the stop sign. I look down. The guy's coming. The other thing is that a lot of people don't use a blinker, including myself. I forget sometimes. But they don't use a blinker, so you're not sure. And they get all the way up to the road, and you wait because you think they might go straight. And then they, at the last second, hit the blinker and turn right. And you're like, God damn it. You should have just put the blinker on a while back, and I would have sat here and waited. Right? Whatever. So this guy's coming. I'm like, he looks like he's slowing down. He's probably going to take a right. So I'm going to go. Well, he was going straight. This fucking asshole, man, he gets up on that fucking horn. I mean, I'm not going to make the horn sound for as long as he did, but it was not a proportional response to my action. You know, I mean, of course, I didn't realize that he was so crazy, but my God. And you know what it made me do? It made me infuriated. It made me want to turn the fuck around and follow his ass. And I don't do that. I try not to get up in road rage and all that stuff, but his response was so frustrating. And I'm like, dude, I mean, it's not like I pulled right in front of him. He was quite a ways away. In fact, I would have had time to I was completely out of his way when he got there. You know, I don't know if he had to brake and, you know, avert from crashing into the vehicle, but I think we had enough room. But his response and that little fucking piece of glass between him and me in that car and him pointing one way and me pointing another just let it loose. And I was like, dude, I'm sorry. You know, I mean, I didn't say that because he, you know, I just looked at him, watch him hold that horn and, you know, he's mouthing something. Rah, 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 rah. And, oh my God, I was incensed. Incensed. And it was not a proportional response to my behavior. You know, what I did was an accident. But it just shows, man, how on edge we are right now. And it's just, it's a rough time. Let me do a reading. I got to do another podcast. People are starting to pour in here. I got to get out of here before they start storming in on me. All right. Daily Reflections. July 8th. Ooh. An ever-growing freedom. The seventh step is where we make the change in our attitude, which permits us, with humility as our guide, to move out from ourselves towards others and towards God. 12 steps, 12 traditions. When I finally ask God to remove those When I finally ask God to remove those things blocking me from Him and the sunlight of the Spirit, I embarked on a journey more glorious than I ever imagined. I experienced a freedom from those characteristics that had me wrapped up in myself. Because of this humbling step, I feel clean. I am especially aware of this step because I'm now able to be useful to God and to my fellows. I know that He has granted me strength to do His bidding, and He has prepared me for anyone and anything that comes my way today. I am truly in His hands, and I give thanks for the joy that I can be useful today. You know, there's a lot, I like that. You know, even in that third step when I turn my will over to a higher power, you know, that's the beginning of becoming useful to God. You know, I don't toot my horn about anything. I'm 50% of the day I'm good, 50% of the day I'm not that great. But I'm sober, right? And I live a sober life. And I'm surrounded by all the shit that comes my way because I'm sober. Friendships, podcasts, business, you know, whatever it is, I show up and I'm available. And the people around me see that. I see it that, you know, I know people that are sober and doing the same thing. I see it in them. And I see the people that they attract. And people rely on you. You know, people trust you. And it doesn't start happening until you finally start to become humble, right? And start to live a life of humility. I say, you know, if you live a life of God, you live a life of humility. You're taking the higher road. You're doing, or maybe not God, but a spirited way maybe is a better way of saying it. And people notice, right? I mean, I can tell you just in the last 6 months, probably I know three people that are attempting to or are getting sober due to the fact of hanging around me. And I don't want to, I'm not special. But, you know, you see people, you know, I remember as a person deep in my addiction and I would see people that weren't and how much better their life is and how much I'd wish my life had some peace in it like theirs did. So I know what it's like. They were working. They were being the hands of God, so to speak. Or they were definitely putting a good word in for humility, which to me is really what it's all about. It's about, you know, surrender, humility, all that great stuff. I hope everybody has an amazing day. I got to run. Bye. Ooh.